where ligands would usually be found. And Jacques, one part of the Jacques life history that I did not present here was that it spent much of a big portion of its time on the soil surface. That's the name Jacques, right? And because of that, zealots would have a proportionally larger predation impact on ligands than Jacques, because zealots don't usually go onto the soil surface. So I hope that answers your question.
And my topic deals with biological control and non-target impacts. The practice of biological control was initiated more than a century ago. It was for a long time considered an environmentally safe approach, but now it is known that it can cause a negative impact on native and desirable organisms. Nevertheless, biocontrol is often seen...
You got it. Good. All done. I'm not nervous. So Jacobson and Weller embarked. This was a side project of a postdoc. So this tells you. This first explains why it took so long to complete it, because it was a side project. But Nancy and I finally published this work in 2002. We had 31 character systems from the immatures, including that very difficult ketotaxy, larval heads, and pupae. And we had several character systems in the adults. We excluded most genitalic characters for this study because homologies were difficult to determine. And some of you have already seen this tree, but again, just to remind us, because I will be using this as the backbone for the rest of the talk, perhaps one of the most comforting results was that Arctiidae was monophyletic. It's always nice when your study group turns out to be a clade. And the what had been called even its own family at one point, the Tanucidae, which tended to be wasp mimicking adults, broke into two unrelated clades, the Old World Syntomines, and then the New World Tanucines and Euchromienes. And as you see from my little statement, Tanucini is not monophyletic, nor is much else. And there's a lot of paraphyly in this tree. But it is something. So what we'll do now is step through what we know about the larval histories and chemistries. In the Lithosiini, this is a nice radiation. This is probably an under... We have over 3,000 described species, many undescribed, and I do not have an estimate of undescribed. Not many active workers in this group. Manet and Bendib define six tribes based on adult morphology, and the very long CD that you see there in the caterpillar is characteristic of the subfamily. Also, caterpillars have this thing called a mola, this enlarged, flattened surface that is thought to be used to break up the lichens so that they can eat them. Again, these are lichen or fungivorous feeding moths, and they have specialized mandibles to deal with that host plant. Syntomini, unfortunately, I do not have decent photos of, but it's a relatively small lineage, only a couple hundred described species distributed in two tribes. Again, it's sort of an African, Asian, European distributed lineage. A very interesting mix of records. It includes everything from dead leaves, fungi, and lichens, and mosses to sort of general plants. And these records are archived at the British Museum on T.R. Bell's unpublished manuscripts. So it seems that we have at the base of the Arctiidae a preponderance of lichenivory and fungivory. We'll actually come back to this life history much higher up in the tree much later in this talk. But for now, let's go to the big subfamily Arctiini, where the majority of the diversity of the Arctiidae lies. And we have a diversity of hosts and a diversity of larval morphologies. In 1988, Holloway declared that no satisfactory classification exists, and so he didn't use anything below the subfamily designation. We follow Kitching and Rollins for now, and as you will see, there's probably some adjustments that will need to be made in the future as our phylogenies become more robust. But this slide gives you sort of the range of phenotypes that you can find in the Arcticini, that basal paraphyletic grade of genera, from very spiky, sort of short seedy to longer hair-like seedy, and then a more sparse distribution of seedy, but still on Faruqi in something like Hypercombi. I'm sorry, that's actually, talk about it later. What we do see in the ancestor of Arcticini and distributed throughout Arcticini is pyrrolizidine alkaloid associations in the larvae, and then higher up a complicated switching pattern that occurs with cardiac glycosides, and we start to get this iridoid glycoside defense. And I just want to note that the IG surveys have just begun, and we're actually we really don't know how many Arcteids are potentially utilizing these compounds. That's work by Dean Bowers, by the way. No tribe synapomorphies were identified by Jacobson and Weller. Chris Schmidt recently obtained his PhD at the University of Edmonton, and in that thesis there is a CO1 study that suggests that Ferguson's five groups are in much need of revision. And one thing we can say about the Arcticini is that polyphagy is common, and amongst the host plants that you see, there are plants that contain either pyrrolizidine alkaloids or iridoid glycosides. Particularly the Spilosoma group has a lot of IG plants that they can graze on, that they include in their diets. We see throughout Arcticidae the evolution of heteroideous crochets. You'll see this in the literature. It's referring to the fact that there are shorter lateral seedy with longer crochets in the middle, or crochets, or however we want to pronounce it. We do see a reversal to the more generalized noctoid condition of homoideous crochets in the Lithosiines and in Verbia. And typically for the Arcticini, we have a robust cocoon. Moving up the tree to the Calamorphini, this is a really relatively small tribe of closely related genera, about 100 species distributed in worldwide. And this is where the evolution of pyrrolizidine alkaloid use with transfer to the adult stage is first really noticeable. And the way I like to think about this is that we're going from PA opportunists, so they include it in the larval diet as polyphagy, but then don't actually really tie their life histories to it. They become dependent on PAs or other chemistries later on in the evolution of the Arcticidae. Also, the transferring something like a pyrrolizidine alkaloid to the adult stage requires some enzymatic machinery so that you don't have the problem of autotoxicity when you metamorphose. So going from a caterpillar to an adult, of course, some tissues are broken down and others reformed. And if you don't do a good job of packaging those toxins or eliminating them in your frass before you metamorphose, you could kill yourself. And clearly, this problem of autotoxicity has been solved by the higher Arcteids. Now, this tree you're looking at was generated by Michelle DaCosta and myself based on adult morphologies. There are 91 species, and it was based on, as I said, adult morphologies, over 100 characters. And you've seen that the calamorphine caterpillars tend to be simple seeded. So we see a reduction in that verrucal mass of seedy. So that seems to be another hallmark of the Calamorphini, slight cocoons, not very hairy caterpillars for being an Arcteid, and definitely PA dependence. Oh, and now we're going to move to the Pericopini plus Nyctimera, which came out with the pericopines in our analyses. And you'll see that in the pericopines we have the first switch to cardiac glycosides, but just a warning, larval consumption does not equate with sequestration. It has actually been shown in Composia fetal... In Composia, which is that very beautiful moth, middle row, far right, I'm not going to use the pointer, the larvae feed on CG plants but do not sequester. Okay, you can see that there is a diversity of larval types in pericopini. It's less easy to describe the larval type compared to the calamorphines, which is much more canonized. Also, we obviously have some taxonomic work to do because we have wildly different larval morphologies occurring in the same genus, and actually Watson and Goodger suggested that Dyschema really is an artificial genus. And I haven't mentioned earlier, but social behavior crops up again and again throughout Arctiidae, and here's just a nice picture of some very hungry caterpillars chowing down. Okay, let's move up to the phygopterines. And these include some of our favorite groups, the milkweed tussocks, for one, we've worked on. And you'll notice I have the tribe in quotes, and I have it in quotes because I'm going to show you in a moment that it is wildly polyphyletic. However, based on molecular data, Forbes had recognized roughly four generic groups. We have larval representatives of the first three. I don't know of any representatives of the little transitional group Polemniini, and John Rollins thinks they may be pericopines anyway. But we'll start with Eucates, because we actually know a little bit of... we will start with the evolution of the Phygopterini. I need to show you that they are indeed polyphyletic. This is based on...